It's 88.5. I'm Leah Fleming. Museums that hold the history of our collective past are having a renewed moment right now. As the country and the world grapples with a rise in white supremacy, xenophobic and racist rhetoric, and mass killing, people are flocking to museums for guidance and reassurance that we will get through this. This is what the National Center for Civil and Human Rights in Atlanta sounds like on a typical day. Earlier this week, I ventured there to meet up with the center's new CEO, Jill Savitt. It's on a tour that Jill breaks down history.
In Atlanta, there was African-American life and white life, and they were very separate. They were both very vibrant and thriving, but they were separated from each other. And you see...
A little further into the exhibit, old televisions are stacked up, pointed in all different directions. But what's on them is the same, pro-segregation rhetoric, including a speech by former Alabama Governor George Wallace.
And I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
So that's Governor George Wallace. Every channel, no matter what you turn, you get segregationists all the time. This was common. This was literally on TV. It beamed into your living room. And so you understand how segregationists were able to shape the narrative. And here they are.
At this museum, you're taken back to the civil rights era to experience the Montgomery bus boycotts. You see a very young John Lewis. Children Singing replicates the moment that four black girls were killed in a Birmingham church bombing in 1963. And then the pictures of the blood of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. outside the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, moments after his assassination.
And you just see, look at the unbelievable fear on everybody's face.
And it's with these images and sounds all around us that we begin to talk about what's happening in our world today, starting with New Zealand, where a white supremacist shot and killed 50 Muslims and injured several others while they were at prayer.
What happened in New Zealand is horrific and a crime against humanity. We know that there is a tenor of hate that is out there, especially against the Muslim community and other communities, but in particular the Muslim community, especially in places where people link immigration to their hatred. In terms of genocide prevention, genocide is the intention to kill, to wipe out an entire group of people based on their identity. And we know from every previous genocide that there is a set of things that always happens beforehand. They are never spontaneous acts. It can be denying groups of people rights to education or to work, ghettoization, making sure that all people live in a certain neighborhood and then cutting off services to that neighborhood so you weaken that community. There are certain types of hate speech that indicate that a genocide might happen in terms of rats, vermin, cockroach, a cancer. Anytime you turn the targeted group into a potential health threat, you radicalize the majority population or the perpetrator's population to feel like it is in their self-interest to harm those people.
So I'm hearing you say some of those terms. And unfortunately, we have heard the sitting president of this country use some of those terms. So are you concerned that we could see a genocide of some sort?
I do not think there is a genocide afoot in the United States. Certainly around the world, there's a genocide going on right now in Burma, also called Myanmar, against the Rohingya people. I mean, genocide is a killing of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people based on their identity. In terms of the current state of affairs in the United States, what we do see is a massive polarization and people digging in and using very hateful language against each other, I think fueled by social media and the internet. And we don't have that middle population being vocal enough. And the only way to crowd out hateful speech is good speech.
I want to ask you this. In 2014, when the museum opened, CNN, they published this piece online where the author admits to a, quote, dirty little secret in the civil rights movement. And the writer says that a lot of Americans just don't want to hear about it anymore. They don't want to hear about civil rights. And some African Americans, they don't want to hear stories about their parents getting hit upside the head while singing We Shall Overcome. And some white people, they just don't want to feel guilty anymore. So how do you deal with that in building an audience for this museum?
Well, I would say the first counterpoint I would give to that is if you go through this museum, you come out feeling very hopeful. You see that people have power. Individuals have power. They can change the world around them. It's hard to do by yourself, much easier to do in a group. And if you get together with other people, you can change things. And we tell that story over and over in this museum. The second point I would make is that history might not repeat itself, but man does, and woman, people do. And so what we can learn from the historical example that we tell here is how a group of people managed to change their world, and really change the entire world, because what happens in America is often repeated in other places, for good and for bad. Historically, the United States has been the biggest champion of human rights around the world, and human rights defenders in other countries have always relied on America to be their champion. And that's at risk right now. America is not standing up for human rights around the world. And so that will have a negative domino effect in other places where human rights defenders are not protected as much as they were. And so anyone who comes to this museum can see, especially our visitors are American, can see the role they play not just in our own country, but how important it is to make sure our government respects human rights so that people around the world are protected.
Finally, I want to ask you, Shirley Franklin, she is the former mayor of Atlanta. She was the first African-American woman to lead this city. She's also board chair of this museum. And she says that you have the qualities to lead this museum at a watershed moment. What moment is that?
I think there is a huge opportunity for this center to repair civic life and to remind people of their duties as citizens. As the world around us feels very chaotic, places like history museums are where you can go to feel a little more centered and to understand that these times feel really unique to us, but the past has many lessons for how people overcame adversity in their country and in their civic life and in how people dealt with each other. We're not the first to go through this.
Jill Savitt, you are the new CEO of Atlanta's Center for Civil and Human Rights, and we thank you so much for hosting us today.
Thank you so much for being here.
To see some pictures of our interview and a video, you can go to gpbnews.org. This is 88.5.